How are you doing?
Oh, look at this fancy table.
It's a smaller table tonight. Perfect timing.
Good evening and welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Judy.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the
serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening we are discussing step 11, and I'll turn the meeting over to Graham.
I'm Graham, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Graham.
Welcome everybody to the Simple Actions meeting of AA. Obviously the people here didn't hear, they've got free food over at Larchmont, so if you want to go now and get it, we won't take it personally. I'm kind of obligated to be here, otherwise I would be there right now. But anyway, we're going to discuss step 12 tonight, and the first part of it, and then next week the second part of it, and then we've got our speaker on April the 1st. So we set up this meeting in the summer last year, really just to try to carry a simple message of hope to people like us who suffer from alcoholism, that there is a way to live sober using the simple actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, finding a power greater than us through the steps of AA, and that's open and available to absolutely everybody, and provided we take the actions. So that's really the message we were trying to carry and also apply in our own lives. We're not big book experts, we're just here to try and share our experience. So the 12th step, we've broken it up into two parts, and the part we're going to focus on tonight is carrying the message to alcoholics. And then next week we're going to focus on practicing these principles in all our affairs, but inevitably there'll be some crossover there. So I just want to kick off from page 89, which is the start of chapter 7, and we had left off with step 11 last week, and it had said on page 88, but this is not all, there is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. Chapter 7, Working with Others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. So, as we've said over and over again through the last however many weeks, it's been 10 weeks or so, a lot of times I come to AA and the attitude I'm bringing is, I'm going to get fixed, I'm going to get helped, these people are going to help me and I'm going to be happy, I'm going to get something. And that's usually the attitude that I bring to AA. But it actually turns out that the whole reason of doing these 11 steps, it wasn't an intellectual exercise to make me feel better about myself. What it was doing was getting me ready so I could effectively do the thing that's actually going to keep me sober. And see, that doesn't work. I'm so selfish that when you tell me that, I'm like, huh? He's just like, no, wait a minute, I need some help here. And this guy Lance, who was my sponsor right back at the start, he used to go like this, Graham, the only help you're going to get is by helping other people. And that would go, vroom. And I'd be like, yeah, but Lance, I don't feel good, you know, whatever, telling him. I got rejected again, whatever it was, you know. So it really doesn't compute to my mind. My mind is wired to make me, to do what I can to get helped and feel good and tell you all about column two, my drama, how the world's screwing me over. As my whole life is geared toward that. And it doesn't compute that the solution to this problem I have is to get out of myself by helping other people in AA. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of people, like, they come to AA, and then the next thing you know, they're like, they're in the church, and they're like feeding homeless people and all that. And then they stop going to AA. And that's fine if you want to go and feed the homeless or build them a house or whatever you want to do. I've done that myself. I volunteered in a soup kitchen. But I don't think it's very clear here. I can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. I can help people. AA is really the last place on the block. After AA, it's just oblivion. No. So it's like, you know, there's like the desert of alcoholism, and right before the cliff that you fall over into oblivion, there's probably fire down there and people screaming, ah! You know, it's bad. And right before you get there, it's like AA's there. And, you know, on the road to AA, there's the psychiatrists, the doctors, the happy pills, you know, the therapy, moving country, blah, 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 relationship, all that stuff's on the road. And then for all the people, the church is there as well. Hallelujah. And for all the people that doesn't work for, there's AA. So all the people that end up in AA usually have been through that stuff. I certainly tried it. It didn't work for me. And it does work for some people. I don't mean to make fun of it. I'm a smart aleck. Everybody knows that by now. I don't mean to make fun of those things. They just don't work with my alcoholism. So I end up in AA, and it's here that I can be uniquely useful to other people. Yes, I can be useful in a church, building a house for homeless people. I can be useful there too, perhaps. But I can be uniquely useful to other people who have alcoholism. Other people who, when they start drinking, they can't guarantee their behavior. And on their own, they can't stay stopped, because being sober sucks. Being sober is unbearable for me. So I have to drink, and I don't even know that's what's wrong with me. It just seems like a good idea. So that's the people that I can really help. And more important than that, by doing this, I get to be immune from drinking. And some of the worst times in my sobriety, and, you know, I'm not going to trot it all out again, but some bad things happened to me when I was sober, long time sober. Some of the stuff I brought on myself with my own selfish behavior. I know you find that impossible to believe that someone like me could be selfish. But believe it or not, I can be selfish in the real world out there, put an act on in AA. Never had a bad day sober. You know, as I get caught with my hand in the cash register. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, during some of the lowest points of my sobriety, when things are really, really the heat's on in terms of my life, bad things are happening, things I perceive to be really bad are happening to me and my family. I've found myself, because I'm used to going to AA, and I'm just, my feet go to AA now, I found myself just showing up at the meeting, and there's a new guy there, and I'm talking to him, and it doesn't feel good, I don't feel happy, but I just keep doing it. And I think that's really the wonderful thing about this. If I'll just keep doing this, and I love it when I sponsor guys, and we're at a meeting, and they get to the new guy before me, and then I have to push them out the way. And that's awesome, because that's how it was put to me right at the start. This isn't something I need to wait to do until I'm a certain amount of time sober, or even until I've done the steps. This is something I can do right at the start. I can walk up to somebody and smile and put my hand out and say, "My name's Graham, welcome, how you doing?" You know, and give them my phone number and tell them I'm going to another meeting and ask them how they're doing and listen to them. That's something we can all do. And I hear story after story in this AA community where guys I know have gone to meetings and the people and their ass is on fire. They're just coming off the booze. And they've identified themselves as a newcomer. And after the meeting, nobody even talks to them. We just do this. "Oh, there's my friend Robert over there. Hi, Robert, how you doing?" And the guy's dying of alcoholism. "See you next time, buddy." Over to Robert. "Hey, Robert, how's your car?" You know what I mean? And I've certainly done that on occasion. But I think that's disgraceful. Not that I'm on a soapbox. But why is that happening? And I think why that's happening is because AA is full of people like me, extremely selfish people. And now I've got sober, screw the newcomer. I don't care. Step over the body. And, you know... So all this stuff gets made up in AA that's not even true. You know, all these blocks that people put in the way of the new guy getting the help of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. This mystique has developed around the simple program of AA. And all these made up stuff that we don't find in the literature. You need to read the doctor's opinion every day for 300 days. You know, and you need to walk to my house, you're not allowed to drive. And it's just crazy stuff. All these things I hear that men are made to do, and I'm like, what's that all about? Well, you're reading the doctor's opinion, you could have done the steps. Okay, so, you know, I'm not here to rain on anybody's parade, do what you like, but it seems to me like there's some pretty clear suggestions on how to 12-step people and how to work with them, and this is really what my recovery is dependent on, is doing that. And I think as long as I'm doing that, I've got a chance of staying sober and helping these other people. And the last bit I want to talk about, this second paragraph, it says, life takes on new meaning. And I'll just blow right through that. Yeah, whatever. Life takes on new meaning. Oh, well. You know, are you kidding me? I'm the type of guy that sits there and says, I wish I was dead. What's the point? You know, all I do is suffer. Nobody understands. And finally, it says that my life's going to have a meaning. And I've said this before, and it's kind of corny, but I ask those of you that have been sober for a while who are helping people, if I look back on my life honestly and look at the things that I've done in my life, you know, I've been to some cool places, I've done some cool things, but if I really look back on what was actually having, what had meaning, things that I did, you know what had meaning? What had meaning was going over and talking to that guy that was sitting on his own and shaking his hand and asking him how he's doing. And then he gets sober, and then it changes his whole life, and it changes his family's life, and his family gets reassembled, and all these people get affected. Not because I did that, but because that's AA and that's what we do. That's the thing that has meaning. That's the thing that's worthwhile. Or is it how much money I'm making? And look at my new canoe sail. Really? So, you know, if I can just stand back for a minute and see that, and I don't want to be the guy, one of my friends who I'm sure had alcoholism killed himself. I was probably 4 or 5 years sober, and he had been calling me And I had ignored his calls, and the reason was he was all messed up and I didn't want to talk to him. And I was sober in AA and he was doing drugs and drinking a lot, and he actually committed suicide. And I could have at least gone over and tried to help him. And I didn't. I turned my back on him. So I don't want to be the guy that's turning my back on people. That doesn't mean I need to give up my whole life and become, you know, just Saint Graham in AA, not doing anything else. But it does mean that if people ask me to help them or call me, I'm obligated to try and help them, because somebody helped me. And to see these other guys starting to help other people really is the bright spot of my life. And that sounds kind of sad. I'm married, I've got two beautiful kids. I love my wife. I've really never had it so good. That's the truth. Thank God for AA. So it sounds kind of weird that the bright spot of my life would be coming to this meeting and going to other meetings and seeing people in recovery. But there really is a bond between people in recovery that I don't really find anywhere else in my life. The only place I really found it was with my drinking buddies. That's the other place I found a similar kind of bond. But that bond wasn't really based on good motives, whatever. You know what I mean? That was based on getting something, whereas I think this is based on giving something. So I really just try to do this. You know, I'm not great at it, but I just try to do it. And when I go to a meeting now, I try to remind myself, because we can all bitch all day long about how crazy that meeting was. I was at a meeting recently and the subject was should I get a female sponsor? It was like a guy. That was the topic of the meeting, should I get a female sponsor? You kidding me? No, I'm not kidding. Okay? Now, I can sit here all day and bring up all these examples and complain about it, but I wasn't at that meeting really to learn anything. I haven't heard anything new in an AA meeting for years. It's just the same old stuff. But what I was there for was to reach out to a newcomer. That's why I'm going there, to share my experience, strength, and hope, and find a new guy and try to help. So it doesn't really matter what's said at the meeting. It's what I'm doing there. You know, I'm trying to go there to help. Judy.
Thank you. Yeah, so there's a place in our literature where it talks about ego-feeding propositions. And I'm not interested in anything that isn't that. So this whole idea that I would, I remember when my, and I didn't sponsor people for a while. I think there was good reason for that. I was not really capable of doing it. But when I was ready, God has been dumping people in my lap ever since. I've never had to go find people to help. It's never been an issue. And I talk to people who say, oh, I got to go help somebody. I'm like, just wait a minute. It'll be, you know, God will put the person in front of you. They're everywhere if you're fit and ready to do it. So the job is to get fit and be ready, not have a motive, you know, a goal, zone in on people that you're going to help. Because honestly, most people we can't help. And really, it isn't us doing it anyway. You know, this is God's business, not ours. So this really is where selflessness comes into play. Because people you'd like to help, people you can see walking off a cliff, you can't stop them. You just have to be there, let them walk off the cliff. Sometimes I try to stop them. It doesn't go well. They don't like me when I do that, and I don't like me when I do that. So I've learned over and over, and I wish I could say I wouldn't attempt to do that again. I'm sure I'm going to step in that hole again. But, you know, this is a walk of discernment in your ego, really, and how much are you surrendered to God. When I'm totally surrendered, it doesn't matter whether the person responds or whether I walk away with anything perceivable anyway. Because most of the time, what happens to me as a result of being actively engaged in this is not perceptible at the time at all. It happens to me over time. You know, God's pretty smart, very wise, and doesn't hand me successes that I can't handle. So
It's kind of a funny thing, you know. You show up somewhere, you don't really know why you're there or what you're going to get out of it. You have to show up like that. And as human beings, we don't show up anywhere like that. You go to work because you want the paycheck. You're nice to your boss because you want them to treat you good. I mean, there's motives built into everything that we do. And this is a place where there is no direct, you really can't. I know we say, oh, we help other people to be helped ourselves. You know, that is the impact. But really what all that means is that God allows us to stay sober one more day so we can help one more person. You know, I'm really not getting anything out of it. It's not on my resume. It's not in my bank account. I can't go to work and tell people about how I drove to Williamsburg with a live drunk in my back seat to take her to treatment. She almost kicked my windows out of the back of the car. You know, I wish Kathy was here. That was something I did with Kathy. And, you know, the things that I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous, they're not reportable except to you. And I'm really not even here to report them to you. I'm here to just do them. And so that leads me into the next point, which is, and Graham talks about this a lot, about judgment. Please don't judge other people in Alcoholics Anonymous about what they're doing and what they're not doing, because you don't know. You don't know what their lives are like. You don't know how many people they're talking to. You really don't know. So, you know, I had a period of time in sobriety where I was sponsoring a lot of people, but not very visible in Alcoholics Anonymous in general. I could easily be judged as not being a good AA. And the fact was, it was just the way my life was set up, and I was just involved. I've always been involved in the last, about three quarters of my sobriety now, with a lot of people. And it's just the way it says in the book, you know, the phone's going to ring at the wrong time. You're not going to want to go. So what do I have to do to be able to show up? I really have to surrender what my desire and my will is about it, because, you know, I'm not really. It's not my business why I'm here. And then what I can extrapolate that into the rest of my life. It really isn't my business why I'm in my life at all, anywhere. But I come up with I come up pretty short on a daily basis when I think I didn't get out of today what I wanted out of today. You know, people didn't recognize me. I didn't get the pat on the back I wanted from the boss. You know, I'm not going to get the raise. I'm not going to, you know, when I get all self-consumed with that stuff, that makes me not want to show up anywhere. And then I want to retreat into alcoholism. And that's, you know, we refer to that as a dry drunk, when selfishness becomes my primary purpose. So the only way to stay out of that is to do the opposite. Thanks.
Thanks, Judy. We're going to continue on page 91, and it's halfway down the page. Paragraph starts, "See your man alone if possible." See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he's not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. And, you know, I regularly go to AA meetings and nobody else except me talks about drinking. Da-da! Yeah, and everybody's like, yeah, me too. So the thing that saved my life, I believe the thing that allowed me to come to AA and eventually take the steps and buy the AA package, was other alcoholics talking about getting wasted. That was really what blew me away, because the steps and God and all that, whatever, I don't even know what you're talking about. It sounds weird to me. It's like a cult or something. Get away from me, you freak. You know, 12-step freak, woo. So But I could not deny when these men and women, and these were, I was in Japan at the time, these were primarily American people, but it was European people there too. They were from all over the world. They were all pretty well-educated people from different walks of life. And it was a big circle, and they knew that I was a newcomer. And so they started with the person beside me and went away from me round the room, and they all spoke for about 2 minutes. And basically what they all spoke about was drinking, and that they weren't drinking anymore since they'd come to AA. And that, I believe, saved my life. That was it, that identification, because I realized that they were talking about things that I'd been hiding. And I thought it was just me that this stuff was happening to. Who would have believed that it was actually happening to lots of other people? And more importantly, they weren't doing it anymore. They'd found a way out. So, you know, whether it's at an AA meeting or whether I'm sitting talking to the new guy at coffee after I've met him at an AA meeting, and he's agreed to come out for coffee or whatever, what it is I'm doing is I'm talking about what happened when I drank. It's very important for me to do that, because it's important for him to identify whether or not he has alcoholism. I was talking to a person on the phone today who is a prescription pill addict, and I don't think he's an alcoholic. So we talked about that for a while. That person said they can take it or leave it, essentially. So I was like, well, maybe there's another program that can help you. Because if you can drink socially, it's not going to happen in AA. You can't make yourself an alcoholic. You can come to the open meetings. But so it's very important for me to try to put myself in that person's shoes as well. I've been sober since 97, and some things I forget, you know, what it's like to have your ass on fire and just be off the booze a few days or a few weeks. And so I like to emphasize that and try to think about that. Because the shoes could be on the other feet, right? That guy could be helping me. And I would like to think that he would help me. And I would like to think that if I was at a meeting, like when I went to my first meeting, some guys came over and introduced themselves to me and offered to help me, as opposed to left me standing in the corner with a cup of coffee, thinking in my mind, am I standing the right way? Is everybody looking at me? Because that's the thoughts that were going through my mind at that time. So, you know, I think it's very important that we offer identification. It's important for me to talk about drinking and what it was like when I drank, because that way other alcoholics will immediately pick up on that and identify themselves, and then they're more likely to be able to hear the message. Judy?
Yeah, so this really does tell us how we're supposed to proceed, and without announcing to the person, we're going to do this now. Since you're the new guy, we're going to all talk about the first step. You know, we really are called to be conscious of who's around us and then act accordingly. And this has been something that requires listening. You know, if you're not listening, I've been in many meetings too where a new person raises their hand, and then everybody just goes on and talks about, you know, whatever happens to be on their minds, forgetting what we're doing here and why we're here. So it really is important, but you have to listen. And sometimes you can't, my experience has been, you can't always just go find them. You have to listen and watch them and then try to determine how best to approach them. Because honestly, I was a person that if you had come up to me and started talking to me, I would have just walked out. I didn't want anybody looking at me, touching me, talking to me, holding my hand, any of that. So, and I think after you're sober a while and you're in the rooms, you can detect people pretty well. I mean, you know what kind of, they kind of send off a vibe of who they are and what they need. And if you're sober and awake and conscious and listening, you can pick that up. And you know the people that you can go sit right and be right in front of it. You know the people you just kind of have to surround. And that's our business, to know that. You can't expect them to tell you things that they don't want to tell you. You have to take the cues when they shut you down. They don't want to talk anymore. You've got to talk more. Stop asking them so damn many questions. Don't interrogate them. So it becomes a skill that we learn out of the effort of not helping them so much as doing something that we're doing for the reason of just doing it. And I've had a lot of people that, you know, and the other thing I want to touch on is the clarity that Graham was just talking about. We don't want to try to attempt to help people we can't help. And I'm really committed to that thought and that practice, that why do I want to mislead you into thinking that I can help you if I can't? You know, if you're not an alcoholic, if this isn't your problem, I don't want to welcome you in and tell you to come on and sit down, and we can tweak this for you. This is a personalized thing that we can make work for you, because it isn't. So I want to be clear right from the start. So you have to listen, you have to ask questions, you have to take the cues of the person that you're trying to help, because you really can send somebody running out of here. And I won't go into that anymore. I'll just say that generally, and I have lots of examples, so I'll stop there.
Thanks, Judy. So we're going to continue with when he sees you know all about the drinking game, and that's also on page 91. It's the second last line. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we've done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he's alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you're satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him, from your own experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And, you know, sometimes when I talk to people who've showed up at AA meetings, just right away, boom, 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 you know, they're at a place where they're like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. And we just talk very briefly about once they start drinking, they can't control it. And on their own, they can't stay stopped. And being sober sucks. And they're like, yeah, got it. But then there's other people who are not that clear about that at all. And the conversation will usually end up where we're talking about their drinking, getting them to relate those things I just said to their own drinking experience. You know, is that something that's happened to you when you drank? And this person I was on the phone today claimed that they got drunk when they were a teenager, but now could have two or three drinks and just say, okay, I've had enough. And I don't really identify with that, you know. So it's not for me to decide whether or not somebody's an alcoholic, but I think it's okay for me to be clear about what AA thinks an alcoholic is and what my own experience is of living with alcoholism, both when I was drinking and since I got sober. So it's really neat when out of all the people that I talk to, because it's quite occasional, you actually come across somebody that is an alcoholic and who's like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. That happens to me too. I have those same mental inconsistencies that you have. I have hundreds and hundreds of experiences that tell me I just shouldn't do this anymore, but I do it over and over and over again, and I can't seem to get out of it. And the great thing about this is that, you know, I don't need to run around telling people, I think you're an alcoholic. It's really none of my business whether they're alcoholic or not. I had this guy call me on Saturday and tell me he was going out to the bar, and you know, he'd said earlier in the day he wasn't going to go to the bar. And I'm like, that sounds good, go. And I remember doing the same thing myself in the first few weeks sober. I was kind of calling the people in AA's bluff. I was like, well, maybe I'm going to go out with my Irish friend. They're having a party tonight. And the guy was like, that sounds fine. Go out, drink if you want, have a good time. Bye. And, you know, and I didn't go out. And so it's important for me to remember that this is really none of my business whether people get sober or not. I'm absolutely not responsible. My favorite analogy is the pizza delivery guy, you know. I'm responsible for delivering the pizza. Bill Wilson delivered the pizza to Dr. Bob. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob went out with a great deal of zeal to find people to carry this message to. They didn't sit at home waiting for the telephone to ring. They went out to find drunks. And when they found them, they told them what they knew of alcoholism and of this recovery program. So my job, absolutely, I have a responsibility to give the pizza to you, the AA message, alcoholism and the simple actions that recover from it. But if you eat the pizza, that's fine. But you can throw the pizza in the trash. You can stick it under your bed. You can do whatever you want with the pizza. It's none of my business. You can give it to somebody else. But my responsibility was to give you the pizza, and I did that. And that's really all I can do. Because like Judy said, this doesn't take the vast majority of the people that I've spoken to about it at that time. It may take in the future, but, you know, it's kind of a numbers game. It's kind of like a sales job. The more people you talk to, the better chance there is somebody's going to accept it. Thank you.
So it's important. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. Even if they can't, because I understood it once. I mean, as soon as I sat in here, I was debating it, whether I wanted to do anything about it, not whether I had the problem. That was the debate. show him from your own experience how the queer mental, well, wait a minute, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. So that's the first thing we're told to do, talk about the hopelessness. Because if we don't have the hopelessness, we can't go anywhere. If you're not hopeless, please go do whatever it is you need to do. I mean, I wouldn't say that to somebody, but that's kind of the tact. If you're not hopeless and so desperate, you're either going to come in here or put a gun to your head. Because that's the way I was. And it wouldn't have worked with me otherwise. If I wasn't at that point, you couldn't have talked to me about anything. You could barely talk to me as it was. So, the hopelessness, that feature of this, has to be accepted as fact for this to work. So we talk about that first. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. These two things are absolutely essential. The hopelessness and do you see that your mind absolutely is out to get you? That you cannot trust anything that comes out of it. And for somebody that was, you know, my higher power was a bottle of booze and my brain. And if one didn't work, I went to the other one. And that was, you know, was just a back and forth game. So I had to be talked to like that. And they did this with me. I wouldn't be sitting here if that didn't happen with me. And it was just the way Graham described it. Nobody was pushing anything on me. They said, this is the way it is. This is how your mind works. And it's important to let people experience their own condition. You know? I mean, that's what's wrong with the rest of the world. The rest of the world is in here trying to prevent exposure, you know, between us and alcohol. And we're trying to prove to you that you can't beat it. You are hopeless. And no, nothing's going to prove that to you like your own experience. I can tell you all day, and I will tell you all day, everything that's happened to me. And I've spent many, amounts of time telling people my story and had them say, yeah, but. Somehow that doesn't apply to me, mm-hmm. Or I'm not quite like you. Mm-hmm. So, and that's fine. So I have to know that's actually a demonstration of the queer mental problem. When you come in with that background, this background we show up here with, and you have somebody sit in front of you and lay out the whole, your story, what happens to you, and you still can't go, yeah, I'm that. Wow, that just proves that point. That's it.
Okay, we're going to read page 92. Right down the bottom, that last paragraph there. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed to never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he's alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he's become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. Da, da, da. So, this is really wonderful, you know, to continue to talk about it. And it says over and over again that what I should be sharing is my personal experience. I'm not talking theoretically here. And, you know, a lot of times what happens is we hear people get big book sponsors. And based on what I'm hearing from other people that survive those sponsors, and I then talk to them about what was going on there, what actually seems to be happening is the two people are sitting down and they're analyzing every single word in this book. Like, and that becomes sponsorship, as we're going to read every single word in this book. And I've got a dictionary that I bought. It's from 1935, so that we know exactly what was in Bill Wilson's mind when he wrote these words. We'll read one line a week, and by the time you're 50 years sober, you'll be on step four. What's that all about? I don't know. If you're doing that, that's good. I'm not trying to make fun of you, but it just seems bizarre. This is telling me, it's not telling me to stick a book in someone's face, it's telling me to share my personal experience with them. And I do sit and read the book with people, but let's not start worshipping the book, for goodness sake. The book describes an experience. It describes a set of actions which will result in an experience. It certainly doesn't suggest, I don't think, that we worship the book and become worshippers of the book. So I think it's interesting how my darkest past and the things that I'm the most ashamed of, the things I did that are the most tragic and disgraceful, those things become the things that are actually of use, of most use to other people when I'm willing to share those things in the context of doing this. Those are the things that can reach across and break through that wall of alcoholism that the guys built up, that I built up. It can reach through that and pull them through. In my experience, because he will start to admit. And this bit about stressing the spiritual feature freely and being willing to talk about that word, the G-O-D word, and being willing to talk about the simple actions that I took, about taking the steps and about joining a home group and about getting a sponsor and about saying prayers and doing all these things in order to have a spiritual awakening whereby the part of my brain that told me it was okay to drink alcohol has now been repaired, and I now have a mental defense against the first drink. I'm happy to share that, and it all starts from that morning. I woke up curled up in a ball crying again because it had happened again, and I said it wasn't going to happen again, and that's where it started, and to share my experience with the simple actions of AA and continuing to try to live by these simple spiritual principles that we all know and we all understand what they are. There's no mystery in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a simple program of action. It's not an intellectual exercise. It's a simple program of action. Action being the word. Judy?
Mm-hmm. So, explain that many are doomed. So this is important to pick up: hopelessness, queer mental condition. Many are doomed. I mean, this is the message. So if we're not carrying that in the context of our own experience, then we're talking about something else, and it doesn't really, it's not going to have much impact. I have experience doing both things. You know, I got sober not by anybody reading the book to me. I'm doing that now with people I sponsor. But nobody ever did that with me. What they did is they told me a lot of things. They said, here's my experience. They would talk to me about their experience. And then they would say to me, use this phone number, show up at this meeting, say these prayers, and then read the book. And it was on me to read the book and study the literature on my own. Nobody ever did that with me. So I got very involved in it. You know, I read a lot. I read a lot of literature, and I talked to my sponsor about it a lot. And what I found happened to me as a result of doing that is because I was fighting this so hard, and it did take a while for me to surrender, but because I was fighting this so hard, the more I studied the literature, the more I had to give up my thinking about it. It was like getting my thinking, you know, my previous sponsor used to call it having your brain Cloroxed. I really had to have my thinking changed about what happened to me mean, what was really happening to me. So I spent a lot of time with the literature on my own, and what happened to me doing that was I had a lot of experiences that I call this getting to know this God and my understanding, because you can't do that with another human being. You have to do that alone. That has to come from within. So, and as I am now reading the book, reading through the book with the people I sponsor, you know, if that's all you do, it's probably not going to have the impact it should have, because there's God, there's you, the sponsor, and God. Those are the three involved parties. And if one of those parties is missing, then this isn't going to work. That's my experience. So, and the you of it is not just calling and not just showing up at the meetings. The you of it is, I'm dying. I want to know what's happening to me. I was always just so grateful, because when I came here, I could not put into words what was happening to me. That was the most baffling feature of this to me. I couldn't make it make sense. Why do I keep drinking? Why do I end up in these places with these crazy people? And why am I doing this? So what's happening inside of me? It was like being blindfolded in a dark room. It was terrible. It was very scary. So my early days in AA, absolutely I survived on coming to AA meetings and listening to people. There were only a few of them, too, in the meetings that were really good and sober. And when they talked, they would say things that were, you know, they weren't reading paragraphs out of the book. They weren't quoting the book. They would say stuff that's like my insides would go, oh my God, that's what's going on. That's what's happening to me. Because it was coming out of their personal experience with God, you know, the literature and a sponsor. That's what they were really talking about. They weren't reading the book and repeating it. They were having that experience. And then they were sharing it in an AA meeting. It's very powerful. And, you know, I remember this one. Anyway, I won't go into all that, but that's what has to happen. And still to this day, there's people in AA that when they talk, they say something very different than what I hear in most AA meetings, because it's coming right out of their active experience doing this. And it's different. It's just different. It has impact. So that just proves this point to me, because I'm still this person. I still need you to show me how my mind doesn't work right. I am hopeless. Because if I kid myself on that I'm not that because I've been sober as long as I have, I'm in trouble. because I am this person. I'm the new guy every day. Thanks.
Thanks, Judy. We're going to finish up on page 100, and we're going to read from just this, the first full paragraph, both you and the new man. Both you and the new man. Yeah, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you'll presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And we're going to skip over to page 102. We've both been gassing too much, so we're a bit behind. But I do want to read this bit here. Yeah, so page 102. Why sit with a long face in places where there is drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it's a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you're a person who wants to eat in a bar, if you're with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means go along. Let your friends know they are not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you are getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives and God will keep you unharmed. And, you know, sometimes in AA it's like a siege mentality, you know. You'll hear them talking about people who are not in AA, they'll call them earthlings, you know, and it's this us and them. And it's this idea that, you know, I'm in AA now, so I really need to shut myself off from the whole world. I can't have friends that are not in AA. It would be ideal if I could work with people that were, everything must be AA. You know, and that's very extreme, and that's very me. I'm a very extreme guy. So it's like, yeah, I'm not talking to anybody unless they're in recovery. You know? And so I just shut out, like, most of the human race and all these possible experiences I could have and maybe opportunities to be helpful. So I've gone through a phase of that, definitely, especially when I first got sober. I really pretty much just did AA. That's all I did. And then I think what happened was the desire to drink was removed as a result of the simple actions of AA. And I was able to go out and get involved in the social life of the world. I remember being less than a year sober and playing in this raucous, body Irish rock band in a bar. And the other guys in the band were wasted and everybody in the bar was wasted. I was sober. I wasn't drinking. And I wasn't uncomfortable. I was having a good time. So, you know, I don't think, for me personally, this is about shutting myself away from life and avoiding alcohol and avoiding being around people that are drinking. I don't seek out those situations deliberately, but I don't think it's, you know, provided I'm on solid ground in terms of the actions of AA, I think it's okay to go out and participate in the social life of this world rather than this idea that it's us against them and, you know, this is it. God's waiting room, and if I can just stay dry until the end, you know, I think life's to be enjoyed sober. So anyway, that's all I've got. I'm really fortunate to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope to continue to do this simple program one day at a time. Judy, there's some time left. Go for it.
Oh yeah, well. Yeah, going out and enjoying life. I have really been blessed by this having this problem removed because I have been able to do all kinds of things. And, you know, I've been in bars on occasions when there was an occasion for me to be there. You know, I have bought liquor as gifts for people. I have just not had to think about it. Now, I wasn't able to do that in my early sobriety, but the problem has been removed from me for today. So, and I know that it's been removed from me for today, and I have to know that tomorrow, but I'm not in tomorrow yet. It doesn't mean that I'm afraid I'm going to drink or anything of that nature, but I am conscious that my relief and release is based on what I do and how I think and how often I'm reminded of the mental inconsistencies that I still have today, that I still have alcoholism. But it isn't, and how I can just compare this. When I came here, I thought there was no hope I would ever stop drinking. I thought I could do it for periods of time because I had done that. I had no experience not drinking like it was going to be a long-term arrangement. So the fact that I am free of it, and it is not the thing that my mind turns to when I'm in trouble. What my mind turns to when I'm in trouble is, who am I going to call? What meeting am I going to go to? Get down on your knees. Those are the things. So my mind's been Cloroxed, and I continue to do that. I continue to Clorox it because it needs lots of massaging with all of this, all the time. And I don't kid myself on that that's not required because I'm 26 years sober. And I'm going to end on that because that's the deal. There isn't another deal. It isn't any more complicated than that. And I'm free of it. I really am free of it. Okay, we're going to close it up. I'm going to pass these baskets tonight for our self-supporting tradition. Every group of Alcoholics Anonymous ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements tonight? Sir.
David. 2 weeks from tonight, this group, the Simple Actions Group, is having supper and a speaker. There are flyers on that table. Graham's holding one up.
Flyers are on the step.
Flyers on the step. 6 p.m. there's going to be a potluck, so please bring a dish. 7 o'clock, Christy E. is coming down from Richmond to tell her hair-raising tale of alcoholic adventure and misadventure and recovery therefrom. So 6 o'clock potluck, 7 o'clock speaker. It's open. Anyone is welcome. Please feel free to invite other people and encourage them and bring them along. 2 weeks from tonight, April 1st.
6 o'clock. Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Raise your hand, all home group members. And is there anybody here who's just joining Alcoholics Anonymous? We'd just like to welcome you, any newcomers tonight.
My name is Adam.
I'm
coming back in.
Hey, Adam.
Welcome.
Good to see you. Okay. We have literature available. Please see any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship is in AA, is yours for the asking. We urge you don't delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Okay. Thank you to everybody who participated. And after we clean up, we're all invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the first part of the 12th step as we discussed it tonight. And all are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting at Bella Pizza. And do we have a volunteer for reading the last 164? There you go, Graham.
I'll read it.
You'll be the volunteer.
Oh, John volunteered.
Oh, John, please.
Thanks, John.
I am John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
The book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we need to know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you than we are. Asking you morning meditation what you can do each day to make you feel safe. The answer is your time. Your own house is yours. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't yet. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass when you encounter others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen. Thanks for reading, John.
Okay, everybody would like to join us saying the Lord's Prayer together.
Here we go.
Okay, Miss Joan, would you lead us out, please?
Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
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 Thanks, Judy.
Thanks, Graham.
Home group business meeting next week.
There's a home group business meeting.